Well, I guess I should thank the organizers for the invitation. And I'm going to be talking about something which is vaguely related to the previous talk. So in the previous talk, we saw a decomposition of forms that had two indices. This time, there's only going to be a decomposition with one index. But we're going to look at basically how it behaves when you how it behaves in families if we deform the generalized complex structure. So I'll begin with just a sort of a perspective on generalized complex geometry. So you can think of it as unifying complex and symplectic geometry. And one of the reasons to be interested in it is there's various connections with string theory and other kinds of physics. So I'm kind of interested in it because if you look at the geometry of string theory compactifications, you get the sort of fields that occur in these generalized geometric structures, and there's also a possible hope of that these generalized complex have something to some sort of connection with mirror symmetry. So you know that in mirror symmetry, complex and symplectic behaviors get exchanged, and it's possible that something like this holds for generalized complex manifolds, and there's various indications that it's an appropriate sort of setting for this sort of thing. And this last thing here, twisting by gerbs. So I'm going to say too much about gerbs, but from the string theory perspective, you get one of these gerb structures. And it's interesting that generalized geometry lets you do geometry when you have a gerb. Okay, so here I'm saying we can borrow tools from complex and symplectic, so that's what I'm going to do in this talk. All right, so H is going to be a closed three form, and then we already saw that you have this twisted differential. So if you just take the exterior derivative and then add this extra term, you get a twisted differential, and you get a twisted cohomology. But because this H is a three form, you no longer have a Z grading, you only have a Z2 grading. And so like I said, this H is related to, you can think of it as the curvature of a gerb, if you know what that is. Or from a sort of string theory perspective, these closed strings have a charge, and this H is kind of like a field strength associated to that charge. So now if we turn to generalized complex manifolds, so there's a certain technical condition, which is the DD bar lemma, which I'll explain later. But when that holds, then you get this kind of a Hodge decomposition of the twisted cohomology. And so we're going to try and understand what happens when you vary the generalized complex structure, what's going to happen to this Hodge decomposition. So I already mentioned that generalized complex has something, some sort of connections with mirror symmetry. So this is a little bit speculative, but the hope would be that variation of Hodge structure in this generalized setting might tell us some sort of generalization of mirror symmetry. But so let's just start with a Calabi-Yau infold to see where variation of Hodge structure comes into it in the usual picture. So you have this Hochschild cohomology and homology. So I mean, you can define these as, well, certain X groups, but let's just take this as a definition. So in the string theory, this one's sort of the space of operators in the in the B model, and this one is the states. But okay, so this HH star is a graded ring, and this HH lower star is a graded module over HH star. And since we're on a Calabi-Yau, we have this holomorphic volume form, and you can see that if you just take your holomorphic form and contract it with p of these tangent vectors, then you're going to get an n minus p here. So that gives you this isomorphism. Okay, so the B model correlation functions. So the correlation functions are supposed to give you some sort of amplitude when you have when you input three things. But if we just sort of dualize, essentially it comes out up to being this module structure. So now if we just plug in some values, so we're looking at this particular case. So H1 of the holomorphic tangent bundle represents deformations of ordinary complex structure. And then here, this is essentially PQ forms. This is P take 1, Q plus 1 forms. And this product is essentially variation of Hodge structure in the ordinary complex sense. Okay, so there was some work done by Capelston and Lee. So they consider these things called generalized Calabi-Yau manifolds. And out of these, you get a topological field theory, which generalizes the A and B models. So I should probably say that if you have a complex manifold with a non-vanishing holomorphic volume form, that gives you a generalized Calabi-Yau. And if you have a symplectic manifold, that's also a generalized Calabi-Yau. So that's how it generalizes these A and B models. And we have replacements for HH upper star and HH lower star, which I'll explain a little bit later. So you have this HH lower star is going to be replaced by twisted cohomology, and this HH upper star is going to become Lie algebraic cohomology. So this Lie algebraic is essentially the I eigenspace of the generalized complex structure, as I'll tell you about later. And then if you look at this, so actually I didn't say it here, but you can think of either of these as the states in your topological model, and then this, so your correlation function again is the module structure, and this particular case where this is a 2, this product is going to be related to variation of Hodge structure in the generalized setting. All right, so I'm just going to review a few basic facts about generalized geometry that we saw in the previous talk. So we have this generalized tangent bundle, which is just T plus T star, and that has a pairing on it, just pairing one forms and vectors. All right, now there's a bracket, which So there's two brackets really. So there's one called the Dorfman bracket and there's one called the Courant bracket. And the Courant bracket is the skew symmetrization of the Dorfman bracket. And I mean you can choose whichever one you want to use, whichever is the most convenient. So I prefer the Dorfman bracket. So the Courant bracket is skew symmetric, but it doesn't satisfy the Jacobi identity. And this Dorfman bracket is not skew symmetric. But it satisfies, well, I probably shouldn't call it the Jacobi identity anymore, but it's a Leibniz rule. Okay, So just to remind you, when I'm using these brackets, that's my notation for the Dorfman bracket. this one's just commutative vector fields, and then you have a lead derivative here, and this I is a contraction. And if you have one of these closed three forms, H, then you just add in this extra term, which is H contracted with X and Y. And that gives you a twisted Dorfman bracket. And if you skew symmetrize that, you get the twisted current bracket. All right, so remind you again about what a generalized complex structure is. So it's a complex structure on the generalized tangent bundle. And it has to respect the ONN structure, so this kind of condition. Then we can complexify E and decompose it into the eigenspaces of J. And then one thing that's worth noting is that if you use this pairing, the plus I and the minus I eigenspaces are dual to one another. So we have this relation. It's also true that this L and this L bar are isotropic, maximal isotropics of the pairing. And we say that J is integrable, or if we have a H, we can say H integrable, and call it a generalized complex structure if this I eigenspace is closed under the twisted Dorfman or current bracket. So it doesn't matter which one you use. It gives you the same integrability condition. And if you take either of these brackets and restrict it, so I should say that the difference between the Dorfman bracket and the current bracket is a certain term involving the pairing, so that when you have an integrable subspace which is also isotropic, then both these brackets agree on the restriction. And this makes L into a Lie algebraoid. So maybe I should just give a quick reminder. Okay, so a Lie algebraoid is, well, it's a bundle and has so it's kind of like a generalization of the tangent bundle. And so it has a map which compares it to the tangent bundle, so this is called the anchor. And then you have a Lie bracket on the sections of L. So this bracket makes L a, not L, the sections of L into a Lie algebra. And then this row is basically going to be a homomorphism of Lie algebras. So and then finally you have some sort of behavior with respect to functions. So this F is a function. Then you're going to get a term which is zero order in F, and then a first order term in F. So if I apply rho, this is a vector field, and then I apply that to F, and then times B. All right, so that's a Lie algebraoid. And there's a complex associated to a Lie algebraoid. If you take sections of the exterior algebra, there's a natural differential you can put on it. It's basically the same formula as the Dirac differential. So if you take cohomology of that, you get this H star L, which is Lie algebraic cohomology. I guess I should say it's also a graded commutative ring. All right, so when we look at differential forms, we've already seen this already, but so there's a Clifford action of the generalized tangent bundle on spinners, so that the vectors just contract and the one forms wedge. And so I can split my spinners up into S0 and S1, which are the even and odd forms, and then the Clifford action just swaps them. And we have this twisted differential that I was telling you about. And because H is closed, it squares to zero. So that's the twisted cohomology. And this twisted differential, if you've never seen it before, it might seem a bit weird. Why are we taking D and adding a 3 form? Well, one possible reason we're interested in it is because of this derived bracket property. So this dot is the Clifford action. So A and B are basically sections of generalized tangent bundle, and these are graded commutators. So if you just write it out like this, there you see the relation between the twisted differential and the Dorfman bracket. So this is kind of like the relationship between the ordinary Lie bracket of vector fields and the DRAM differential. All right. So, if I have a spinner, so spinner just means a form of mixed degree. Okay. So, I can consider the annihilator. So this is elements of E that annihilate the spinner, and that's always isotropic if the spinner doesn't vanish, because if you have consider. So if A and B annihilate the spinner, then this combination vanishes. Because it's a Clifford action, you'll just get something like this. So if rho is non-vanishing, then this has to vanish. So it's isotropic. But if it's maximal isotropic, then we call it a pure spinner. So the point of this is that if you have a generalized complex structure, then the I eigenspace is maximal isotropic. So you can ask whether there exists a pure spinner for it. So there's sort of global obstructions to that. But what we can do is locally there exists a pure spinner unique up to scaling. So what you get is you get a line bundle inside the bundle of differential forms, and the non-vanishing sections are exactly the pure spinners for J. And so we call K or KJ the canonical bundle of J. I should also point out that a pure spinner has to be either even or odd. So I'm just going to call that tau. And that's going to be, I call that the parity of the generalized complex structure. And then we get an isomorphism between, so this S is the bundle of differential forms, remember. And so what this isomorphism is if we act on the canonical bundle by Clifford multiplication with L star, we generate the whole, we generate all the differential forms. So in a bit more detail, so here we have this decomposition that goes from U minus N up to UN. So UI is basically the result of Clifford multiplying I plus N times. So remember this L star is isotropic, so the order that you Clifford multiply doesn't matter, so that's why it becomes a wedge. So the picture is something like, all right, so this U minus N, all right, no, first I'll say this. The Clifford action of L star sends you up, up 1 degree, and the Clifford action of L takes you down like so. So you can see this is the space annihilated by L, so this one is the canonical bundle. And this one's annihilated by L star, which is the same as L bar. So this one is actually the complex conjugate of the canonical bundle. And if we consider DH, then it doesn't preserve degree. In fact, well, first of all, then it changes the parity. So you can consider the part that decreases degree by one, and you can consider the part that increases degree by one, and we'll call those D and D bar. Now, those aren't necessarily all the components. If J is not integrable, then we saw before there was this nine-house tensor that contributes other terms. But so we have this result that J is H integrable if and only if the twisted differential is just D plus D bar. So then, of course, DH squares to zero, so then if you just read off the components, you get that D and D bar are differentials and that they anti-commute. All right, so what we can do with this setup is we can do a spectral sequence. So we're assuming J is integrable, and so we have D bar cohomology groups, which is just defined in the usual way. And then this decomposition gives you a spectral sequence. Oh, this SI is actually, that should be UI. So basically, I'm just saying the grading together with this decomposition gives you the spectral sequence. maybe that's not so obvious, because if you look at this picture, so if I take sections of everything, so then D bar goes up one, and D goes down one. So you might wonder, how do you get a spectral sequence out of that? Well, you can sort of convert it into something that's more sort of conventional. So what I do is I if this is P, so at the point PQ, I put basically U. Let's see if I get this right. Q minus P. And then I'm going to put a differentials this way. So I want this one to be D bar, and I want this one to be D. So if I've done that right, I think that looks right. Okay, so that gives you a sort of a bi-grading, and then then you can run the spectral sequence, because you get a filtration by considering P degree, so you get the usual sort of setup happening here. Okay, so that gives us a sort of generalized Hodge to Durham spectral sequence. And the E1 term. So I'm filtering by P, so the E1 term is going to be this D bar cohomology. And then I'm going to let FP denote the associated filtration. So I should probably explain these indices a little bit. So first of all, recall that twisted cohomology is Z2 graded, so there's really only two twisted cohomology groups, and they each have filtrations. And so my FPHM essentially is going to correspond to twisted cohomology classes that have a representative consisting of degrees P, P take 2, P take 4, and so on. So you see, this is actually an increasing filtration. It's more standard to use the decreasing filtration, but this notation just fits in better when you consider just the ordinary complex case. This just matches up better this way. So that's the notation we're going to use. So, and the other slightly unconventional thing is that this filtration goes up in steps of two. So if you have if P equals N mod 2, then it's a term in here, and if P is N plus 1 mod 2, then it's a term in that one. Okay, so we say there's a Hodge structure on twisted cohomology if the following two conditions are satisfied. So first of all, we want the Hodge to DRAM to degenerate at E1. And then we want this condition that if you take FP and F minus P take 2 conjugate, these are both subspaces in twisted cohomology. This K should be a P plus N plus tau, actually. You want this to be an isomorphism. So the picture is just to make that a bit clearer. So if you have Alright, so this is, so if you had a decomposition like this, in twisted cohomology, so this part is FP, and then this part you can see is going to be F minus P take 2 bar. All right, so the other thing I should have said is, so assuming you have a Hodge decomposition, meaning twisted cohomology decomposes into a sum like this, and that conjugation sends degree J to degree minus J, assuming those conditions, then you can see this part is FP and this part is F minus P take 2. So that's how you see this condition. And so, but it's also sort of just a linear algebra type of fact that if you have a filtration and it satisfies this kind of condition, then you get a decomposition. So HP del bar will be FP intersect F minus P conjugate. So you can go from the filtration back to the individual terms. Okay, and then the filtration just looks like a sum like this of the D bars. Okay. So the DD bar lemma. So this is, there's a DD bar lemma in complex geometry, and then this is just the generalized complex version of this. So what this tells us is if you have a form which is closed under del and del bar, then it has, and it's in the, and it's either del or del bar of something, then it's actually DD bar of something. And so if we just adapt this theorem from this paper, you get that the DD bar lemma is actually equivalent to these conditions of the Hodge decomposition. That is the degeneracy of the spectral sequence and the filtration gives you the Hodge decomposition. So this is pretty much the same story as in complex geometry. All right, so now I want to consider families. So how does this decomposition vary in the family? So first of all, what do we even mean by a family in generalized geometry? So a simple version is that you just fix M and you let T vary with a parameter. But I'm going to do it a slightly different way using current algebraoids. So, okay, here's a, I already wrote out the definition of a Lie algebraoid. So this Courant algebraoid is a similar kind of thing. So you have a vector bundle and you have an anchor. You have this extra piece of structure, which is this bilinear form. And you have a bracket, which is not necessarily, in fact, it's usually not skew symmetric, called the Dorfman bracket. And then you have a whole bunch of axioms. And I'm not going to use these axioms really in the rest of the talk, so don't feel like you have to remember these. But okay, so you have this Leibniz identity, you have this rho sends the Dorfman bracket to the Lie bracket. You have this behavior under functions. you have that the symmetric part is related to the pairing, and then you have this compatibility of the bracket with the pairing. All right, and so what's usually done in generalized geometries, we use what's known as an exact Courant algebraoid. So this rho star map, if you you take the dual map to rho, which you would think of as going inside E star, but then you just use the pairing to identify E and E star. So you get a sequence like this, and this composition is zero. So you get a complex. And if this is exact, then that's called an exact Courant algebraoid. And so, of course, as a vector bundle, you can always just split this. But there's a little bit extra structure. So we have this classification that if you choose a splitting and then you actually write out what the bracket looks like, then you find it's one of these twisted Dorfman brackets I was telling you about. So depending on your choice of splitting, you get a specific three form here. If you change your splitting, then this H will change by an exact term. So the cohomology class of H is sort of intrinsic to the Courant algebraoid, whereas the particular representative is dependent on our choice of splitting. Okay, but generalized geometry, you can think of it as sort of structures on an exact Courant algebraoid, because that's what we're doing. We're using T plus T star with this bracket. But now I want to consider families of exact Courant algebraoids. So how should we do this? So I'm going to have a fiber bundle here. And so I'm going to say that a family of exact Courant algebraoids means the following. So we have this anchor map, which is valued in the tangent bundle, and I'm going to assume it's valued in the vertical tangent bundle. So I call the vertical V. All right, and so you get a natural sequence like this. And if we just assume that's exact. So the idea here is if I take any fiber and I restrict this sequence, you'll see this will become T and T star of the fiber. So it looks like an exact Courant algebraoid on the fiber. And I mean, this actually works. So if you choose sections A and B on the restriction to a fiber, and if you just extend them smoothly, take the bracket and then restrict, you can check this is actually well defined. And normally you can't do this sort of thing with Courant algebraoids, but because the anchor is valued in, because of this condition of the anchor being valued in the vertical bundle, you can check that this extension and restriction procedure actually makes sense. And so the restriction of E to a fiber, you find out is an exact Courant algebraoid. And you have to do a little bit of work, but it's pretty straightforward. So in this sense, E is really a smooth family of these exact Courant algebraoids. And now I can talk about a smooth family of generalized complex structures as basically just a generalized complex structure on E. So it's the same definition that we've been using for generalized complex structures, except E is no longer T plus T star. It's a different Courant algebraoid, but it's the same thing. You have an endomorphism J squares to minus 1, and you take the I eigenbundle and ask that that's closed under the bracket. And So we know that if we restrict E to a fiber, we get ET, which is a current algebraoid. And if you just restrict J to a fiber, you get JT. And you can see, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. This gives you on each fiber, it gives you an integrable generalized complex structure. So this really is a smooth family of generalized complex structures. All right, now there's a particular way that you can get a family. So if I take, so here's my fiber bundle again, and this time F is an exact current algebraoid on M. So F is something like Tm plus T star M. But then I let A be the kernel of this map. So A is things in Tm plus T star M, whose vector part is vertical. And then A perp is the annihilator. Okay, and then you can check that the sections of A is a subalgebra and the sections of A perp is an ideal. So that if you take this quotient, then that has a well-defined bracket. And you can see this is one of those families. Okay, so I told you how we can have a smooth family of generalized complex structures. So, but there's also a natural notion of a holomorphic family. So we have these bundles defined as before. And if we have a generalized complex structure on F, so J is actually just an ordinary generalized complex structure on M, but it has the property that it sends A to itself, and then because J is orthogonal, basically it sends A perp to A perp. So J actually acts on this quotient, so it gives you a smooth family. But then we want the idea that it varies holomorphically with the base. So how does that come into it? Well, J also induces a complex structure on F mod A, which if you just do some linear algebra, it's just the pullback of the tangent bundle of the base. So if that comes from an integrable complex structure on the base, that's what we're going to call a holomorphic family. Okay. So next we need some sort of notion of the Gauss-Manning connection. So when you have a fiber bundle, if you take cohomology of the fibers, you get these flat vector bundles. But here we want to do the same thing, but for twisted cohomology. So you get this pre-sheaf. So if you take an open subset of the base, and if you just take the twisted cohomology of the pre-image, you can check that this, if you take the sheaf, you take the associated sheaf, it's a local system. And so it's a local system with coefficients in this vector space, which is just twisted cohomology of a fiber. So you can think of that as a flat vector bundle. So I'm going to call that the twisted Gauss-Manning connection. If H is trivial, then this is just the sum of the usual local systems you get from fiber cohomology. Okay, so now I want to consider families of generalized complex structures. And I want to consider the Hodge decomposition, so I want the DD-bar lemma. So if you just use some sort of standard elliptic arguments, you can see that if the DD-bar lemma holds on a fiber, and we're going to assume the fibers are compact, then in all sufficiently close fibers, it'll also hold. And so your Hodge decomposition gives you a decomposition of this flat bundle of cohomology. So you have this flat vector bundle with the Gauss-Manning connection, and you have a filtration on it, which is the Hodge filtration on each fiber. So if we assume all the fibers satisfy the DD-bar lemma, so that we get this decomposition. So now, this is the flat bundle with the twisted Gauss-Manning connection, and here's the decomposition into D-bar cohomology on each fiber. So for any particular T in the base, this bundle takes this value, this vector space. And you also get a filtration which is just the sum over the terms. So if you look at, remember it goes up in steps of two. So if you take this quotient, that's just d bar cohomology degree p. Okay, so we have a version of Griffith's transversality. So if you you take a section in one of these filtrations and you apply the Gauss-Manning connection, so x is just some vector field on the base, then you can show that it's valued in the next step up in the filtration. And so then if you take this quotient, you see the connection is a differential operator on S. But when you take this quotient, you're sort of quotienting out the diagonal piece. So this will actually be basically a bundle map on the base. And so the story is very similar to ordinary complex geometry. So you have a sort of a Kodaira-Spencer class. So I didn't write it down here, but basically, if you have a generalized complex structure J, and its I eigenspace is this Lie algebraoid L, then H2L represents the infinitesimal deformations. So for each value of B, you look at the tangent vector x at B, and that will give you a class which is the deformation in that direction, in the direction of x at the point B. And then this map is the Clifford action. So so H2 of L is represented by things in wedge 2 L star. And then so you can Clifford multiply, which behaves something like that. So then if you just pass to cohomology, so the Clifford action of something in H2 sends you from P to P plus 2 in cohomology. All right. So and then from that you can get period maps. So if you just fix a fiber, say M naught, and then you use the flat connection to identify all the fibers. So let's just assume the base is simply connected to do that. So then you get a map from the base into this Grassmannian of subspaces of twisted cohomology. And the differential of this map is basically the map into the Grassmannian is given by these subspaces. So the differential is sort of related to this differentiation. So that's how you see that the differential of the period map is essentially that variation of Hodge structure. Now, if the family is a holomorphic family, then these period maps are holomorphic. And that just follows if you can show that these... So you have this deformation class that depends on the direction in the base. And for a holomorphic family, you can show that if you rotate the vector by the complex structure, then the deformation just gets changed by I. So this, from this, you get the period maps are holomorphic. Now, so here's a specific example, a generalized Calabi-Yau manifold. So a generalized Calabi-Yau manifold is a generalized complex structure such that there's a global pure spinner. So remember, so that's just a section of the canonical bundle U minus N, and it's non-vanishing and DH closed. And then there's this theorem that if you think about compact Calabi-Yaus, there's this unobstructedness theorem. For generalized Calabi-Yau, it's almost but not quite. The problem is basically you have to assume the DD bar lemma. Then you know that infinitesimal deformations can be integrated. So at the least you get a local moduli space whose tangent space is H2 of L. There may be some global issues that you can deform away from the DD-bar lemma, but at least we get this local moduli space. And there's a natural period map, which is, so if you have a generalized Calabi Yau that's defined by a pure spinner, then I just take it to the line in this projective space spanned by that spinner. And this is really just the period map P minus N. All right, so, and then we can show using variation of Hodge structure that this period map is an immersion. So, perhaps it's easier to explain it like this. So this H tau, twisted cohomology space, looks like plus extra terms. And so this one is just the span of the pure spinner. And and then if I have a class in H2 of L, which represents a tangent vector in the moduli space, then the variation of Hodge structure, so the differential of the period map will be essentially the space spanned by the action of K on phi. But you can show for one of these compact generalized Calabi Yau that this is actually an isomorphism between H2 of L and this. So it's clearly an immersion because within this part you have H2 of L. All right. Okay. So let's consider this symplectic case. So that means that your spinner is the form B plus I omega. So B is a closed 2 form, and omega is a symplectic form, and you can check. This gives you a generalized Calabi Yau structure. And the DD-bar lemma for compact manifolds, compact symplectic manifolds, is basically the strong Lefschetz. And if we assume that, then the Hodge filtration ends up being like so. You take this obvious filtration and then you just multiply it by these exponential factors. Now, a word of warning. You might think that the D-bar cohomology is just going to be the same. Like you just take one of these cohomologies and apply the exponential. That's not the case. Those are a bit more complicated, but the filtrations are what have this straightforward form. All right, now if we have a holomorphic family of a symplectic type, so then what do we have? We have a fiber bundle. We have a constant rank Poisson structure whose fibers give you the symplectic structure on the fiber. And this class on the fiber, you can think of it as a section of this local system of degree 2 cohomology of the fiber. And because these period maps have to be holomorphic, you can show that this B plus I omega is basically a holomorphic section. Okay, so let's consider complex type. So if I have a complex structure I, just an ordinary complex structure, then it's actually integrable, but it's also integrable with respect to a closed H, which is 2, 1 plus 1, 2. So again, this S should be a U. So you have a decomposition of forms like this, and the D-bar operator, however, is not the usual one. So this D-bar naught is supposed to represent the usual D D-bar operator in complex geometry. And then the D-bar here is this H-twisted one. So in this case, there's actually two filtrations. Well, there's always two filtrations, okay? So there's always the Hodge filtration, and you always get a filtration by considering the degree of forms, because if you have this twisted differential D plus H, it only increases degree, so you always get two filtrations. But what I found was that in the complex case, these two filtrations fit together nicely, so it gives you a mixed Hodge structure. So what this means is that if on these quotients, these filtrations induce Hodge structures individually. And in the untwisted case, if you do this procedure, then you recover the usual Hodge decomposition. So in the untwisted case, this quotient is just cohomology of degree m. And so the induced Hodge structure is just the usual one. All right, so just to finish, I would like to say a few things that I don't have that would be very interesting. So earlier there was a question about SL2 actions and primitive forms. So this is a question it's not obvious whether such a thing exists, but it's an interesting question nonetheless. And also related to that is there any sort of notion of polarization? I should say that there's this Mukai pairing in cohomology, that's a pairing on the Hodge structures, but it's not the same as a polarization. So you can ask whether there's something that plays the role of a polarization. and also I want to consider sort of more technical things, like what if we have a generalized complex structure with singular fibers? What happens, what can we say if we go around a fiber? For instance, if the base is a punctured disk, what's the asymptotic behavior? What sort of monodromy transformations do you get? All this sort of technical machinery that you would want if you want to do some sort of mirror symmetry with these kind of things. So those are the open questions, and that's it. Yeah, sure. You just take a compact symplectic manifold that doesn't satisfy this strong Lefschetz property. So something like a nil manifold, I think. Symplectic nil manifold. Well, I'm not entirely sure, because there's this issue with the DD-bar lemma, so I'm not sure whether you can make that global or not. So, I don't know. Generalized special case. this reminds me, I mean, Nigel was telling me about this. We made this joke, generalized special. But I have to look into that. I'm not sure. Right, he did an earlier version where his generalized Calabi-Yau is actually a generalized Kähler such that one of them is a pure spinner. Just a pure spinner. So it's, he did a generalized Kähler where one of the complex structures is a pure spinner. All right, well, I need to take another look. Right. Oh, you mean how they're related? Well, here's the thing: the filtration is easy to write down, and then you can just use this property that's the intersection. So, yeah. So when you have this strong Lefschetz property, you can actually work it out from that. Oh, that's. Oh, right. No, that part's okay, but the question was, the issue was, so it's always the case that this del bar cohomology is isomorphic to K minus N, right? That's always true. But the question is, how does it naturally sit inside the twisted cohomology? Yeah, I mean, it's... Well, I yes, I do use that. I mean, okay, there is an explicit map, but it's not just the e to the I omega. It's also this contraction by the Poisson vector. So it's like something like this. So this is the Poisson vector which takes forms down degree 2. So if you yeah, so if you take it's something like that, right? Yeah. But if you consider the filtrations, since this only decreases degree and has like form 1 plus omega inverse on 2i, if you consider how it preserves the filtrations, acts as an isomorphism on like H naught plus H2k plus. So that's why the filtration is, that's why when you consider the filtration, you can just ignore that term.